Welcome, everyone, to the Abundance Formula Podcast. My name is Gina Oldham, practitioner of prosthetics and orthotics, fitness expert, business owner, lifestyle entrepreneur, and four-time national bikini competitor. This podcast was created to empower people to build abundant lives for themselves, lives that are purposeful, fruitful, and send a ripple effect through the world. From short motivational segments to game-changing conversations with highly successful and abundant people, be ready to learn the formula of common actions, thought patterns, and principles that create abundant living. Whether it be your mindset, health, business, or relationships, the Abundance Formula has what you need to uplevel your life to the one you're called to live. So here we go. Hey everyone, I have a couple quick announcements. First of all, make sure that you are part of the Abundance Formula Community Facebook group. This is a place where you will be able to download workbooks, worksheets, free guides, all kinds of really amazing stuff that I'm creating to go along with each and every episode of the Abundance Formula podcast. These things are meant to help you take the lessons you learn in each episode and really apply them to your own life to create abundance for yourself in whatever area of life each episode is focused on. So make sure you're part of that group and make sure that you're following the new Abundance Formula official Instagram page to have exclusive lives that are happening there as well. And so just make sure you're part of both of those groups so that you don't miss anything that the podcast has to offer to create abundance for your life and to connect you with other like-minded people that are looking to do the same thing. So it's a great place to network, great place to connect and get support and to take things to the next level. Last announcement is that we have a few more online personal training openings if you're interested in that, where you get customized workouts for yourself each month for your needs and goals, customized cardio plan, customized nutrition plan. All these are constantly updated each month as far as nutrition goes, depending on how your body responds. People are loving this. So make sure that you jump in. If you're interested, send us a message at oldhamstrong@gmail.com. You can check out the online personal training program at www.oldhamstrong.com/online training. And of course, at oldhamstrong.com, you can check out all the different things that we offer. But online training specifically has some limited availability. Today's guest is Rachel Barbeau, who is a sportscaster turned entrepreneur, speaker, philanthropist, and mental health champion. She's developed a movement she likes to call I'm Changing the Narrative with student athletes and professionals in mind, and she helps really focus them on the belief that one crooked course made straight is everything. I absolutely love this, and it's perfect timing for May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. We're going to dive into how she shifted from being a sportscaster and becoming very obsessed with the mission in this area of life. She speaks about the power to change the narrative and define purpose in people's lives. She helps to challenge each person to respect, protect, and cherish others, to serve as a role model, and to value themselves with self-love, and encourages each person to leave a legacy by using their platform to make a difference in the world. She also has a new book coming out called Relentless Joy: Finding Freedom, Passion, and Happiness, Even When You Have to Fight for It. This woman is so amazing. She has a really epic story that's shifted her from being a sportscaster into the work that she's doing today. I just absolutely love her passion for helping people in the mental health industry. It's so impressive, her heart, the level of heart and dedication that she has. She provides so many amazing resources for you guys, which is huge, because I know so many people who struggle with mental health just feel lost, especially for stuff that isn't astronomical in price. We talk about that as well. So she has so many resources for you guys, so many one-liners that are going to just change your life, shift your mindset. Again, like I said, this is perfect for May because it's Mental Health Awareness Month. So I'm so glad I can present you all with Rachel. I hope you love her. Let's dive in. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Abundance Formula Podcast. And I'm so excited today to welcome Rachel Barbeau to the podcast. She is one epic woman, and we're so blessed for her to be here today. So thank you so much for being here, Rachel.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I absolutely love joining podcasts and getting introduced to new audiences, and hopefully making people think and feel and do something with it. You know, I've got a friend that was diagnosed with ALS that played for the Titans that said that. His name is Tim. Mm-hmm. And he said, famously said, I can make you think, I can make you feel, but if you don't go do anything with it, then what's that for? So you know, it's a joy for me to get to spread what I feel like God's put in my heart, and hopefully somebody takes something from it and goes and works that into their life and into their soul.
Yes. Amen. Well, to start off, I love to start with just you telling everyone your backstory so they know where you've come from, some of the things you've been through, and what's led you to where you are today doing the things you have on your heart today.
Yeah.
So go for it.
How long do we have? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I just wrote a book, and so it's all in there. And then there's yes. I saved a ton for a second book. But yeah, I was a sportscaster for many years. I was just trying literally to keep food on the table and a roof over my head. I mean, I had goals and aspirations. I did want to be a sideline reporter for ESPN. I wanted to do those things. For the first part of my career, honestly, I was consumed by fame. I was consumed by trying to fill the holes in my soul that were void. I had some issues. I had things that I needed to work out with God and with therapy, and I didn't really love myself. And so I had this big, bright, shining career that was going in an upward trajectory. And early on in my 20s, I battled addiction. I'm such a, you know, faith-filled person because God saved me from that. And I'm here to tell my story. And so I get past that, and I have this metamorphosis, if you will, of really just loving myself. I think so many of us are out there and we are seeking love desperately from other people and affirmation from the world. And I see it every single day, just on social media, the things that people are putting on social media, and I can see right through it. It's a, you know, it's a desperate cry for people wanting to love them. And so, you know, that revolution, that metamorphosis happened in me. And then I became along the way towards the end of my career, the first female host on SiriusXM on their collegiate channels. You know, I vote for the Heisman still, one of the few women in the world to do that, hosted the very first college football playoff. So broke a lot of barriers, coached young women as well. And then in 2016, and I felt like I thought that set my soul on fire. And it did for the longest time. It did. My career, I loved it. But I also didn't realize how much that was my identity. I was Rachel, the sportscaster. And in 2016, there was a problem in college athletics, and God made me the kind of person that a do something girl. And I felt like I could do something about it. That at that time, if for the college football fans out there, it was sexual violence, domestic violence, guys getting in trouble, coaches getting in trouble. I mean, it was terrible. And so I gave a talk at FSU in 2016 on purpose outside of athletics. What's your legacy? My own experience with domestic violence. If they were in the room that night, would they have helped? And I thought that I was just going to do a talk and be a sportscaster to the day that I retired, but that's not what happened. I did another one 6 months later, and then I feel like I blinked, but there's been a heck of a lot of hard work in the process. But now we're here 7 years later, almost 7 years, August 26, 2023, and I've worked with 60 plus colleges, many of them yearly. I've hosted multiple national mental health games. I work with Customs and Border Patrol, law enforcement in multiple states, halfway houses, prison ministry, high schools, K-5. And we've expanded our topics. We were talking about mental health before the pandemic even started. This idea of self-love, this idea of soul care, which is deeper than self-care. And what were you born for? What sets your soul on fire? And interpersonal relationships. So it's really just blossomed out. I say if you're alive, age 6 to 96, you need this message. And I train other speakers now. And then I just wrote a book that's coming out June 20th. So all of that, and I'm a bonus mom and a wife. And I'm just incredibly blessed.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, so there's so much I want to unpack with it. And especially, you know, want to dive into your book. But before we get to that, one of the things I want people to hear, because I think a lot of people struggle with this transition. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to be like, well, I don't love what I do right now, so find something else. So that's one journey. But then the people that do love what they do, but then feel this drawing to something else, whether they don't know if they want it to be monetized or not.
Yes.
For people kind of in that a little bit confusing phase, I think some people then don't know what to do with that. They're just kind of like, okay, now, like you said, they feel like they have lost their identity. And so then it's almost like, they just, no matter how much they've accomplished, it doesn't add up to anything. And so, and again, we're kind of looking, as you said, for this external affirmation of even what our, who's saying that our career matters. You know, there's people too that are like, they want to be high achieving, they feel called to something extraordinary. Anybody listening to this, it's typically like they feel called to something more. But then who decides what, if that's good enough, you know? So Right. What was kind of the mindset, or like you said, there's difference between soul care versus self-care, and I want to dive into that too.
Yeah.
But what did you have to do within yourself? Or I guess maybe it surprised you. I don't know that you'd planned on all that happening, but so kind of what do you say to those people there? And then, you know, maybe take us through that this was a surprise that,
yeah,
that happened.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like, and people ask me this all the time, like, what's my thing? You know, like, for, let's just back up for those that don't know what their thing is. You know, your thing might end up being something, as you mentioned, that you monetize. It may not. It may be that you're a photographer and you go to, shelters for women that have been abused and take portraits for women and children and get somebody to glam them up and make them beautiful and make them feel beautiful just for a moment in everything that they do, right? I have another friend, an artist, he has a company called Reflections of Christ. And he said, I was a typical, you know, and I'm just using being a photographer as an example. He said, I was a, you know, a typical photographer. And then I felt drawn to start doing these portraits of Jesus. And he said, my whole trajectory of my, you know, my career changed. So I don't know what your thing is. And this is what I say to people. What bothers you? And this is like some soul investigation. What bothers you? Because what bothers you doesn't bother me, maybe so much, mm-hmm. right? Like, yes, we're all bothered by, you know, tornado wiping out a town, but some people have personally been through a tornado. And so, you know, that affects them. And that goes back to a place of what they had to do when they rebuilt. You know, maybe there's something that you can do in that. And so I always say, you know, 7 years ago, I'm changing the narrative. If it was based off providing meals for Meals on Wheels. And it's not that I don't love old people. I spent my time growing up. I think part of why I am who I am is my mom took me to nursing homes when we were little. But if my thing was Meals on Wheels 7 years ago, I would have burned out because I'm not deeply passionate about, you know, old people getting food. And that sounds terrible, but you get the context of what I'm mm-hmm. saying. People are my currency, and particularly at that time, it started with athletes and it's really just bloomed out. And so what I would say to people is I call this soul homework, and you are the greatest experiment that is so worthy of deeper introspection. And oftentimes we are busy, 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 and busy is great. I don't want to not be busy, but at the same time, busy is often a thing that can get us distracted from what we are, what our soul is calling. So I would start by telling those people or asking people that are listening to say, do that deep homework. What bothers you? There's something that bothers you that doesn't bother the next person. And then you say, what are my gifts and talents? What are my gifts and talents specific to me? And how can I use those? Too many people are going out as well, and they're serving just to serve. And I don't want to dissuade people from serving. What I'm saying is find what your sweet spot is and you'll never stop serving. I was just in Missouri speaking to a football team, not about consent and sexuality, but about commitment and love and relationships. And, you know, because there's great speakers for those other things, right? Like I am more on the interpersonal relationship side. And I found myself right before I was leaving the hotel room just start to get the butterflies. And I said it in a video. I said, I still have the same butterflies that I had 7 years ago doing this, because whether it's queens I speak to or kings or police department or what at Border Patrol or kids, it's somebody's baby, somebody's brother, somebody's son, somebody's grandson. And so if you do that deep introspective homework, you can often find what your soul is telling you. And I think we are just so busy that we don't listen to our soul these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. And I think when people just start listening to their soul, I've heard this concept on a podcast recently that like it's very much okay and preferred that you should start small. I think a lot of people think they yes. got to go big right out of the gate. Yes. And so then they don't do anything. Even they want to be a speaker, they want to be an author, whatever, or they want to make do an impact like that. They think, well, then it's got to be some big event. It's like, no, just start yes. with something small. Start with 10 people, start with whatever and do that several times and then see if it's still lighting you on fire. And if that is your sweet spot, like they just feel like it has to go big straight out of the gate or you're not doing it right. Whereas really all the people who have ultimately gone big and we're seeing them at that place, they really did it small first. We just don't really hear a lot about those stories because they were small and maybe they didn't sell out this, that, or the other. Yeah. They didn't have a whatever, but that's where they did start. And so
you make a great point. Can I just add to that? Yeah. You make a fantastic point. I talk about it in my book. I used to wear lashes and I loved them and I wore them for years. And I had this lash artist and she was a bomb.com and I could never find anybody like her, but we were having this conversation and she loves cats and she wants to start like one of those cat cafes. And she was paralyzed, like you said, about the steps. Like, you know, she was like, I can't do that right now. I can't afford another rent. I was like, but you can do X, Y, and Z. You could right now, you're so good. You're such a talent. You could start teaching other lash artists. And then if you wanted to, you're about to buy a house. You could do your lashes out of a home office if you wanted to, or home studio, you know, in a cottage next to you. That's another thing you could do. Thirdly, so I was giving her all these business ideas and I do that. I've coached on and off for years with people and we'll whiteboard the steps. A baby step is still a step, right? And the other thing you said that was freaking fantastic is that you see people's successes. A lot of people won't show you their failures. And I am the person that will show you my failure. I will show you when things don't go right. I've had people pray for me after I lost my mom when I was face down in a prayer closet. And I showed people my vulnerable and my ugly and the other side of the apple that isn't pretty and shiny. And I think if you only knew what they really went through and the things that they put on that nobody showed up to. I mean, you know, having just wrote a book and it's coming out. I saw this thing the other day where it was this person had posted and said, nobody showed up for my book signing. Well, all these famous authors then, you know, commented and said, hey, listen, my first book signing, I was sitting there by myself and one person showed up and I was so excited. And it was actually a person asking where the bathroom was, you know, like everybody goes through this. Like everybody goes through this. And I wish more people would show you that and not just the, you know, the Beamer or the Rolex or the purse, which I'm really not, attracted to those kind of coaches anyway. I'm more attracted to people that say, here's how my life changed. And as a byproduct, I was able to provide for my family, but these are not the things I'm leading with.
Right. No, I love that. That's one of the thing quote that bothers me too, how many more people could step into their game changing calling knowing that all these now New York Times bestselling authors that have the prepaid for book tour that sold out every time in the big theaters and all that were like, nobody showed up for my first thing. Nobody, you know, and whatever. And so it's like, man, because that would just give so many more people permission to be like, wow, they still did it and they did the next one and the next one. And then now look where they are. How cool is that? You know, you really just have to start showing up and getting out there. So more people know about you and know about your mission and can then connect. The other thing that I've been just super, the podcast I had that came out today was talking about this topic that I made the title kind of, this may be polarizing. But me and a colleague were talking about it a few weeks ago that he was kind of like asking me where I saw myself in 10 years and definitely didn't have all the steps. I was like, well, I feel like I may be here, whatever. And so then I asked him and he was like, you know, I learned a long time ago that I actually like don't have a 10-year, 5-year, any of that plan. He said, because I realized that all the best things that happened to me in my life were unplanned. And he said, and I started looking at when I had used to have, like I used to have a plan, I got kind of too focused on that. And I felt like I was missing out more on what God was trying to bring me because I had pictured it a certain way.
Yes.
And so I think there's a balance, obviously, of both. I've had certainly plenty of successful people. Like you, if you are writing a book, you do have to make a plan, but there's this very fine balance that I do think ultimately is where everything rests, is you do have to know that really the breakthrough, especially when you believe in God, is when he's chosen it to be. Yes. You know, if he intends for your book to be a New York Times bestseller, he will make it so even if you're a nobody, it'll take off. Or it won't be if it's not meant to be, even if you're somebody. And so like we just also had to hold on to that degree of faith, because even for you, like this whole new world that you launched into, you didn't do that first speaking event intending this future 7-year plan.
Amen. You make a great point. And I think everybody's got to find, if we give everybody a cookie cutter way of life, and this is what you should do, and this is what I espouse, I think we're losing out. What you're doing with your podcast, what I'm doing with my teaching is saying, hey, let me enlighten you. Let me teach you some things that have worked for me. And yes, we can make a 2 and a 5 and a 10 year plan, but leave room for the magic of God. Leave room for the magic of miracles. Leave room for to step out into the unknown. I remember when I was younger, I mean, I thought I'd be married by a certain age, have kids by a certain age. My life did not look like that. And it's altogether wonderful and different. And my trajectory was, you know, a little bit different than other people. And so absolutely. And I think that's what we're doing. We're just enlightening people, and it's a blessing to be able to enlighten people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just cool to hear stories like yours. You're like, okay, just keep showing up for the things, like in that moment, that speaking of it might have seemed relatively mundane to you compared to the other successes you'd had. We're like, this is just a little thing I'm doing on the side, and it's turned out to be everything. So I think that's cool for people to remember again. And those small steps, like that probably might have equated as a small step because it wasn't something you thought was going to just rocket ship your career. But then look, it really has created the new career you were ultimately meant to be in, at least right now. So the other thing I want to dive into, because I know it's a huge part of everything you're doing, of the changing the narrative, is mental health. So tell us a little bit about your mental health journey and why you're so passionate about it and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, a trigger warning for anybody that's watching, that's been through something hard themselves or experienced suicidal ideations or lost a loved one to suicide. But I've always been a pretty happy person. I had some internal work, and therapy is my jam, but overall pretty happy. I had some father wounds and some things that therapy and God helped me address. But I lost my dad in 2014. And then in 2019, I lost my mom to cancer after a 10-month battle. And I had helped her in her journey with her juicing and, you know, choosing different care and those things, taking care of her. I was off the road working at a house in Nashville, so I didn't have steady pay coming in. And she dies on May 1st, 2019. And like April 30th, like, you know, a couple of days before, if you will, my longtime boyfriend and I had broken up. So here I am dealing with a heartache. My mom dies in my arms and I'm broke. Mm-hmm. And I was too ashamed to tell anybody. And so, you know, I went through all the stages of grief and shock and all of those things. And I went home and had a lot of people that loved me, that wanted me to come stay and, you know, take care of me and do all those things. But I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm good. You know, July, it was about the second week in July. And I even looked at my social media around that time. You would have never known, because what I'm learning more and more now, we have a psychologist and a mindfulness expert on our team. I am just a mental health advocate. I'm the person that normalizes talking about mental health and destigmatizes it and tells you therapy is amazing and you can learn so much about yourself. But what I'm learning now is that high functioning people can get into trouble very quickly. We also are seeing it more and more now, where somebody who is happy has fleeting thoughts, has a thought come through. They may not be depressed for a long time, but they have a thought come through that feels, whoa, like, what would it look like to open this car door and get out and roll out, you know? And what would they think if I just went in there and picked up that guy? You know, like these crazy, they feel crazy, but if we're being honest, more and more people are having these thoughts. And I think it's a culmination of a lot of things. I think it's social media. I think, honestly, from a faith perspective, I think it's the devil. He's not even hiding anymore. I think it is true mental health issues. I think it's depression. It's a lot of different things. But that night, it was a combination for me of those factors, double heartbreak, and then the shame of thinking I'm going to lose my house. And then also sleep deprivation. I was getting up early for serious shows. And the second night of sleep deprivation, I began to hear people say they heard voices. I heard one voice, and it sounded like a snake in my ear. And it said, you're pathetic and you're weak and you can't even keep anything, and no one loves you and no one stays, and the world would be better off without you in it. And so I believed that, and this is now part of the battle plan. It's facts or feelings. I believed those feelings. I also believed the lie that I could not burden anybody with my problems. And I will tell people this, people would rather share your burdens than carry your casket. And those are really powerful words. And so I believed I couldn't call anybody. And so I survived somehow through the ideations of picking up the gun off the top of my refrigerator and taking my own life. And I, whoever I woke up as the next day, like some warrior that had not even existed before, came out of that. And since then, I've been on fire to help people. I've been on fire to carry buckets of water for people that are still in the house and are burning. And I think back now, and I tell people this, I think back now, the things that I almost took myself out of this world for. And one of the things that just blows my mind is I almost took myself out of this world for wood and nails, for a house, you know, a house, mm-hmm. you know, a house, right? And my life force, all the people I was supposed to touch, all the things I was supposed to do. And that man I broke up with, I ended up marrying him, you know, and I couldn't get my mom back, you know, like she's somewhere else. She got her healing in heaven. Couldn't get my dad back. And so I think about the things that we go through in those hard moments. And it's mind blowing. And so what happened to a movement that was already very powerful was I began to talk about that night. I began to talk about my own mental health journey and a battle plan for having three people that you're going to call, whether you're happy or sad or won the lottery or only have a pack of ramen noodles. You're going to tell them, you're going to call them or text them when you're having a hard time or when everything's going right. They are your ride or dies. I didn't have that battle plan that night. And so that I infused that into the movement and then it just completely took off.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really amazing. And I was curious too. So with all that you know, you've built at this point, so there's people that are feeling, like you said, those things. There's so many people that are. Have you run into the issue of like that, yes, all these therapies and these things are so good, but it's also sad that they're also very expensive.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've found, just because I've had family members that have needed it and it's just too expensive. And it's like, if it's too expensive for us who are doing very well,
yeah,
then why then nobody else can get it, you know? So like, what do you help people with, or what should people do? Cause it is hard when you're in the throes of a place like that to then be like, okay, well there's either free options like going to a church and or trying different counselors that are cheaper, but a lot of times they maybe aren't quite as good. So you may have to shop around quite a bit. Well, you're in this desperado place, like you're most likely going to give up after maybe trying two places.
Yeah.
So what do you help people with in the area where they're like, well, I can't afford the help that might get me through?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different things here. One, if I were to deny that our mental health system is broken, I'd be a fool. It is broken. I had a client that I worked with, that I coached, and she did a little experiment in the state of Colorado. And she called three big hospitals, mental health facilities, where there was, you know, psychologists and whatnot. And this was right around the pandemic. And each one of them said, we've got a 3-month waiting list. And she said she really like tried to lay it on, like she sound depressed, if you will, sound anxious. And not one of them said, hey, here's an alternative. Here's what you should do. Here's what you can do. Here's who you can call. And she said, what are we doing? You know, what are we doing in the world? You did mention, you know, one of the things you can do is you can call a church. You can Google in your area, your city, your name, low cost mental health services. There are companies like ConnectMD, like $30 a month. You can get access. You and your whole family can get access. There's teletherapy. Of course, I like you, when I lived in Nashville, I had a therapist, and then I was like, I'm not sure. Am I just talking too much? She's not talking enough back to me. So then I went on this journey of finding other therapists, and then I ended up right back at the one that I started with. It's often a journey, just like life is, to find somebody. And then you think, well, maybe I can find somebody better. And then you might end up back with the person you started with. So I think knowing that it is broken, knowing where we are today, and knowing that we're in absolute mental health crisis, you have to be dogged for your mental health. You have to keep pushing. And I know it can feel insurmountable and it feels like I just need to quit. This is, you know, so what am I doing here? I can't get anywhere. But if you quit, you rob the world of who you are. You rob the world of all you can be. And I tell people this all the time, you haven't even met all the people you're going to love yet. And that to me, like, just gets me every time. Mm-hmm. Like, you haven't even met all your friends yet. You haven't met all the people that you're like going to light up their life, whether it's a compliment in the grocery store or whether like you fall in love with them, you know, like you don't know all the people you're going to love yet. So I would say to people, I know it's a journey. I know it's broken, but those are some things that you can do. And obviously if you're in a crisis, you call the crisis, you know, helpline, and you can choose which one you can call the new one, or you can call it, you know, the old one. But my point is, you just got to fight for your life. And I know what it feels like because I've been clinically depressed. I've been in emotional quicksand. I know what it feels like. But I'm begging you to fight for yourself and fight for your place in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I know we'll dive into your book in a minute because you talk about, you know, finding freedom, passion, happiness, even you have to fight for it. Yeah. One thing I did want to ask really quick, still on the mental health topic. Yeah. And then I remember you'd mentioned earlier in your telling your backstory, I can't remember how you phrased it, as to that you had addiction issues or something like that. Yeah. For people that are struggling with addiction issues, how do, especially if maybe they haven't found a place like someone to work with to get through that, how do you get through that? And even if it's merely to being like, we inadvertently sometimes are addicted to those negative thought patterns because it's what's familiar to us. So instead of belief, we would still hang on to the familiar, you're not good enough. So just in regards to all of that, how do you help people in that area?
Yeah, look, addiction is shame. Addiction is shame, right? Shame and addiction, they're synonymous. You're shameful of what you're addicted to or what's going on. I heard a great pastor and author, I think her name is Nona Jones, said, you know, shame is like mold. It grows in dark places. And so you put the light on it and it eradicates shame. It eradicates mold. I would say to somebody who is not entered into some sort of help, if that's what you so choose or what you need, you've got to find somebody around you that you trust, somebody you love, and you got to tell them. You've got to be open and honest. We espouse in my movement, I espouse to this idea of radical vulnerability. And does it mean that I'm going to meet somebody, and I talk about this in the book, and talk too much and say too much, and then, you know, immediately feel like in the process, like, did I say too much to that person? Like, you're thinking as this is happening. But then I said, you know what? Maybe I'm showing them how to be beautifully open and how to take risk and how to take chances. You got to find somebody, a grandmother, an aunt, a friend, a somebody, a pastor, and say, I'm watching porn. I'm using food as, you know, as a weapon against my own body, eating my feelings. I am gambling my life away. I'm drinking too much. I'm taking pills. The first step starts with the acknowledgement, one to yourself and to somebody else. You know, there's, you know, amazing 12-step programs as well that I highly recommend. And so, you know, look, addiction is eating us up from the inside out. And it's killing marriages. I did a podcast years ago about porn, just in particular. And it's, you know, it's killing marriages. It's killing this idea of what sexuality is. Little girls are thinking they have to do that, and little boys are thinking, and it's disgusting that you can find this right on the internet now. You don't even have to search. You just hit one off keyword, and you can find it. Now we're seeing child trafficking victims that are ending up on Pornhub. I saw that this morning. And it's being sold and it's being consumed, and it is nothing but the enemy. It's nothing but the devil. And so I would say to anybody, whether it's food, drugs, jail, or excuse me, drugs, you might end up in jail, any of those things. And that's the vision that God gave me. Mine was hard drugs for 8 years that started as fun. And God gave me a vision and said that if you don't let me help you, you are a runaway train going down the wrong, you know, the wrong track, the wrong way. And if you don't let me help you, you're going to end up dead. You're going to kill somebody else. You're going to kill yourself. You're going to end up in jail or all of the above. You're going to break your family's heart, basically. And I was tired. I knew the last couple of years when I began to sell it to support my habit and hide it from other users, and that I needed it simply to be social. In the evenings, I knew that my fun had taken a really, really destructive turn. I was, you know, I was lying and manipulating and all of those things. And so by the grace of God, he helped me get clean. And it's now part of my story, being able to share that with others.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Just to hear like that, not only transformation is possible, but, you know, I'm curious about this step where, again, where people are that they know they need to do it, but it's obviously very hard, and it's been ingrained into quote, who you are at the time. Mm-hmm. Is there any tips you can give to people, or just is there just a reality to accept? Like, for example, when they're so deep in this addictive space and they're moving out, the things that used to or that they know should bring them joy and fulfillment truly do not at the time. Yeah. They don't bring them joy. They don't really want to go do the things, go be with the family, go, you know, whatever it may be. Does it just come down to that if you keep choosing that over and over anyways, even though at the moment, like you said before, don't necessarily go with feelings.
Yeah.
I don't actually want to do that. It doesn't actually go bring me joy to keep doing it over and over, because eventually it'll just snap and change. Or I'm curious about that process.
Addiction robs you of all of those things. Addiction is a disease, just like cancer is a disease. You're sick. You've got to understand you're sick, and your thoughts are sick. Your actions are sick. You're sick. And so understanding that addiction is a disease is the first thing. And understanding that addiction, the disease, robs you of your relationships. It robs you of your joy. The things that should bring you joy are vapid. You know, it's like, what am I even doing here? You're a shell of a person. I was a shell of a person. You know, I'd go to my dad's. I still remember, bless his soul. And I'd sleep half the time at his house, you know, and I barely saw him anyway, because I was too important, you know, and I felt like my life was too important in that place where I was. And I'd go to his house and spend time with him and sleep half the time. And, you know, I made peace with that a long time ago, but it still breaks my heart. And so you do there. It's the same thing with mental health and knowing that you got to do something. You get to a point where you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and it's going to take the people around you. It may take a 12-step program. It may take checking yourself in. It may take a crap ton of therapy. It may take medication. It may take all of the above. I work and give my testimony in a place called the Love Lady Center in Birmingham, Alabama, and I've been going there for 10 years. And I wrote about it in the books, like four levels of like women, 400 or 500 women. And some are coming out of drugs, jail, you know, prostitution, abandonment, you know, some have no teeth, you know, tattoos on their face, they have their children there. It's a Christian hallway house. And some women I'll hold in my arms afterwards, because we stay and pray, will say, I've been here, this is my 12th time in here. And I'm like, baby, then it's a 12th time is the time. You know what I mean? Like, you're never too far gone. And what the enemy wants us to believe is that you are too far gone. You're too dirty. You're too messed up. You have failed. You have let people down. You have done this. You have done that. And I just want to remind people, you're never too far gone, but you do have, in everything, there is some level of, oh my God, you know, I've got to, even if you're just depressed today, victory today looks like for me getting a shower. Victory today for me looks like making a salad. Victory today for me looks like answering a text. It may be the tiniest step, but baby, it's a step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back to those small steps. Again, yeah. you don't have to just wake up the next day and you are all better. But I know
you're not going to be. I was just working with a guy in the last stop I made, and we were talking about forgiving his father, who was a serial cheater. And how he'd been angry at him for 8 years. And I said, what would it look like for you to forgive your father? And I said, I'm not saying that you're going to go, you know, hand in hand with your dad next week and celebrate Father's Day. But what I am saying is it's a step in the right direction. And you would be surprised. I told him how much it'll affect you. You think you're giving forgiveness to this, your father who's messed up. But in actuality, you are releasing yourself as well from this bitterness and this pain. And you might have to do it every day. You might have to say, I forgive you every day for the next 5 years. I don't know how long it's going to take you to get there. And that also doesn't mean that the person automatically deserves a front row seat in your life. I had a friend say to me, your life is like an auditorium. There are people that should earn the front row. Some people need to be moved far out of the auditorium with love. Some people need to be in the back row. And, you know, you determine that, right? So that doesn't mean just because you forgive your dad that all of a sudden you're hunky-dory, but it does mean you're on the road, and it may be a slow road, but you're on the road to reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all that's just so beautiful. Last thing, I know I keep asking, but one of the most popular episodes of mine have been when we talk about mental health, which we know why. And so the last thing I want to say or ask about is, so you said, you know, so this mental health, all these mental health issues is a disease. there are some people that in their recovery process that I, you know, have experienced that. So they get hung up on that part. This is a disease, and it ends up all kind of being a crutch on accident to justify maybe not pushing through the fight of going to do the thing that they know they should do, even though it doesn't bring them joy right now. Well, I have this disease, you know, as if it's not something that can be, it's an unsolvable disease or it's an, you know. So what is your thoughts on that for people who that they kind of get hung up on that, especially when they're in a low point, to just be like, this is who I am. And this is, you know, they're not as bad off as they used to be, but they can kind of feel like they can only go so far because this is a disease and it's part of them.
Yeah, I talk about it in the book. I've talked about it many for, you know, several years. But there is a level of everything that I've said today and everything you're saying. You have to get your shovel and do the work, whether that is, again, crawling to the shower or eating a salad like we talked about, or just simply answering a text. You, there is a part of you, there's a will there, that you have to reconnect with. And I think there are, I've been clinically depressed before, right? For a period of time. I battle anxiety. I have an anxious attachment. You know, I'm working towards secure, but I'm learning all about that, you know? And so, but I think you are absolutely right that we can, because of where we are in the world today and just circumstances, I think you can very much lean on it like it is a crutch. Like, oh, well, I'm just this way. You know, I had clinical depression, right? Like I was clinically depressed and I worked my way out of that through different modalities, through different therapies, through different things, a lot of different things that I did. And so, you know, I would encourage people to take that baby step, whatever that baby step is, because you can find yourself, and this is hard to hear. This is going to be hard for some people to hear. But if you don't call the therapist and you don't do anything about it and you don't even take, you've got to reconnect with that will to live. You absolutely do. And you got to do the work. Life is work. And I, you know, there's all sorts of mental health issues that you have. If it's schizophrenia, you got to take your medication. You know, there are things that you, whatever it is that you have, you may need therapy and Jesus. You know, you may need therapy and medication. You may need medication, therapy, and Jesus. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just, and I just got asked to speak at a church last year. And that's what I said. I'm like, you know, for a long time, people were like, no, you just need Jesus. Well, you know what? Jesus put a lot of great therapists on this earth. And I think they're walking out their path, but you got to use them, right? They put medications here for people to, you know, to help balance some things in the brain. So again, I think there is a level of personal responsibility. I just heard T.D. Jakes say this the other day, and I'm changing the narrative that is not faith-based. I have RJB, Rachel Joy Barbeau, that is faith-based, you know? And so, you know, I'll come back and forth between the two a lot, but I heard T.D. Jakes talk about it the other day about the mind, the power of the mind, of like making up your mind. I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of being broke. I'm sick. And my mom used to call it stinking thinking, you know, to her in heaven, my Gigi, I'd say, I'm so sick. And she'd say, no, she said, you're just giving the devil his due. She'd say, I'm sick, but I'm getting well. I'm broke, but I'm working towards getting rich. I'm not in the job I want to be in, but I'm working towards a better one by learning another skill on YouTube at night. And or working with, you know, a coach or, you know, taking these classes or whatever it is, right? Like, so you are as limited as you tell yourself you are. And the more you tell yourself, I'm stupid, I'm sick, I'm broke, I'm this, I'm that, I can't do it, this is not going to change, the more you are going to be in that bed or in that place for the longer time. So I think there is a level of personal responsibility that if I didn't preach that and I didn't share that, I think I would be really remiss.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I love all that. I love T.D. Jakes too. I mean, yeah, he'll just tell it to you. I mean, I love it. Well, let's dive into your book. Okay. Relentless Joy. Why the topic? Tell us what it's about. And, I'll ask another question after I hear you kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, Joy is my middle name. My uncle named me at birth. And I, as you've heard throughout this podcast, have been through the ringer in my life. You know, I have every reason to go live in a cave in a mountain with a pet goat, you know, and never come back. You know, like I have every reason to do that. But as I teach in my book, you know, it's bitter or better. And for a while in my life, there were times where I was bitter. And God has shown me, you know, resiliency has shown me, therapy has shown me a lot of different, you know, ways for sure. It's shown me that better is the way and that, you know, I can use my pain for purpose. And so I want to teach people that they can do that. And so this book, I'm so jazzed about it. And I hope any author is super jazzed about their own book. But for me, I think it's super, it's neat. It's different because it's part self-help, part memoir. It's got some faith in it. But even if you're not faith-based, you can keep reading through it. There's a part in there where I say, listen, if you've been church hurt, you don't have faith, you believe something different. At the very least, by the end of this book, I hope you think this Jesus was a really rad dude, you know? And I call Jesus a rad dude, you know? And so, and he is. And so, but at the end of every chapter, there's something called a joy start, and it's like a jump start for your soul, but it's a joy start for, it's like a jump start for your car, but a joy start for your soul. And so I invite you to take what you just learned in the chapter that I taught through stories of other people, history, travel, my stories, and then apply it to your life, like right there. And then there's some journal space at the end of the book. So for me, it's like, you know, all these different parts blended up in this book with the storytelling that's really, it's really great. Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. I can't wait. Is it out already or when is the release date?
It is June 20th, but what I'm learning, is that pre-orders matter. They matter so big time. And so we're working on right now, by the time this podcast is out, I'm sure it'll be up. We're working on, if you go to relentlessjoy.com, we bought the website. We're working on some bonuses and some different things of how you can, we have two goals. One, we want people to help us donate books. When I go to a school, like a high school, I want to be able to give away these books to kids that really want them, that really want to read. I also want to go, I'm going the Sunday after the book is released to the Love Lady, like I talked about. And my audacious goal is to give them 500 books. And so if you go to Relentless Joy, by the time this podcast is out, there'll be ways to, you could donate books and you can feel so good about yourself knowing that these ladies at the Love Lady or that these kids at these schools that really want a chance to say, Rachel, I will read it. You know, like I'll threaten them within their life. You better read that book if I give this to you. But just kidding. But, you know, there's ways that you can partner and help me spread the word on this book and get it in the hands of people that otherwise might not be able to get it themselves.
I love that. Yeah. And reading all your stuff too. Well, actually, before we move on, one thing I wanted to bring up, just cause it was kind of perfect that it's called Relentless Joy. I was listening to a really awesome podcast the other day, with Ed Milet and Matthew McConaughey, and Matthew McConaughey believes there's a difference between joy and happiness. Do you feel the same? And if so, what is it?
Yeah. Happiness is fleeting. Joy is everlasting. It's sustaining. I've had joy. Again, I mentioned it earlier when I was face down in my prayer closet, just wrecked from losing my mom. I've had joy when in the throes of addiction. You know what I mean? I've had joy in the hardest times of my life. Joy is persistent. Joy is, joy has our back. Joy is like begging to be noticed. And happiness, I can be happy. I was happy earlier. I may not be happy in an hour, but joy is something that is consistent and there and begging to be noticed.
Love that. Yeah. And so then you have a podcast. I didn't realize you had a podcast called Joy Starters. Tell us about the podcast, what kind of genres and what's it about? Where is it located?
Yeah, you can find it anywhere where podcasts are located. And it's awesome. We do it every 2 weeks. And it's everything that everybody asks behind the scenes, like when I travel, what I'm writing about, what I'm doing, what's happening, the people I meet on the road, like the behind the scenes stories of I'm changing the narrative of the book, of my life. And it's been really well received. So it's the Joy Starters, and you can find it anywhere where podcasts are available, like your great one.
Oh, thank you so much. Awesome. Well, we'll make sure we have all that in the show notes as well and link to your book and the website and all that good stuff. So tell everyone where to find you and follow you and all of that as well.
Yes. I'm on at Rachel Barbeau on all platforms. LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, Instagram, all of it. And then they can find more information about the movement at imchangingthenarrative.org, the letter I, the letter M, changingthenarrative.org. And I am the person, I love to connect with people like how you and I connected. And I love it. You know, I have best friends that came from, literally that came from social media that were at my wedding, you know? So, I mean, I love connecting with people, and I, you know, it's like my emails come to me. They don't go to somebody else before they come to me. I read my emails. I read my DMs. And I love it. And then we also have, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, we have a little Joy Starters Club that was started to spread joy and notice joy. And it's no www, just joystartersclub.com. And it's the cost of a cup of coffee a month. And you get a journal, a hard journal sent to you. And then you get these couple of times a week, you get a monthly challenge, and you get these text messages with the theme of the month sent to you. And then we have a meeting at the end of the month. And then we have a separate WhatsApp chat to get to know each other and just encourage each other and share our joy. Because studies tell us the more you focus on, that which you focus on is that which you notice. So we can literally rewrite neural pathways by focusing on being grateful, love, joy, peace. If we're grumbling and complaining and negative and angry and watching the news all the time and all of those things, that is what we're going to notice. But if we focus on the things that are light and lovely, we tend to notice those things.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love it. So the final question I love to ask everyone is, what does living an abundant life mean to you? And if someone were to ask you how they could start to build an abundant life for themselves, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think the abundant life is the same thing of being a joy starter. It's really the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's loving fully. I think it's expressing yourself fully. I think it's also loving yourself fully. Oh my gosh. When I started to really love myself enough to know where I have blind spots, where I need help, where I need to work on things, but loving myself enough to giggle at myself and liking being by myself and truly like knowing that God didn't make a mistake when he made me, and he didn't make a mistake when he made you. I say in the book, he wasn't like out to the heavenly Panera, you know, the day you were created, you know, that bread is good. But you know, like living in abundance. I also, if you're an introvert, I say this to people all the time, be an introvert, stop trying to make yourself an extrovert. If you're an extrovert, stop trying to tone yourself down because people, you said you're too much or you're not enough. Like, be who you were created to be. That is an abundant life. If you think it and it's good and lovely, I chase people down to give them compliments all the time. You know, like, you have beautiful eyes, you have this, you have that. And the other day, my bonus daughter, we were in the car, and this is how I know I live an abundant life and why I'm so grateful to be with you today. She's 15. And she said, you know, the other day, there's this girl in class, and she did her hair differently. And I noticed it. You know, I noticed everything, Rachel. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, so, you know how, like, you always go back and compliment people and how you're so, you know, you say nice things to people. And I said, yeah. And she said, so I went and told her how much I liked her hair. And you would have thought, like, I won, like, an Emmy, you know, in my soul. You know, man?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, today I did okay at this parenting thing, you know? So, knowing that I passed that on to my bonus daughter to love people radically and abundantly, you know, like your podcast says, that's everything to me.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope that you love this episode and that it was able to help you move in the right direction towards building the life that you want. If you take just a quick moment to leave us a positive 5-star review, I'd be so, so grateful, and share with any friends that you think would love it. This not only helps spread the mission of this podcast, but it helps to open the door to even more amazing guests and opportunities to better support you in amplifying your success and overflowing your cup with abundance. Thanks again, guys, and catch you on the next one.